The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world. This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom. Let's go for a ride. Somebody's going to get the ass kicked. Somebody's going to get their wig split. Somebody's going to get the ass kicked. Somebody's going to get their wig split. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck. 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 I tried to blow into a water bottle to get that fine that you'd get off a beer bottle, but I'm not drinking beer. See what happens? People! Huh? Adam Carolla is coming up. He's the podfather. I'm also going to be taking your phone calls a little later in the show, so keep your eye on the Twitter. Eye on the Twitter. The phone number will be posted at Talk Is Jericho. You want to call in. Don't miss it, okay? But before we get started, got to take you out to the woodshed. I know I spoke to you about it last week, but in all seriousness, I need your help to check out my amazing sponsors, my sexy beast sponsors, who make it possible for me to do this show for you for free twice a week. And now we've made it really easy for you to find them all in one place. Go to podcastone.com and click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then you can click on Talk Is Jericho and easily access all my sponsors. Every one of these sponsors I've personally selected, I believe in all of them. Now, not only can you check out my sponsors, you can also get to my Amazon link from there, even better. Brand new. Open it up the world. You can now link to Amazon UK and Amazon Canada, as well as Amazon here in the US of A, to help support the show. So all my UK, Canadian, American Jerichoholics can help keep this show running. Keep the show running. Keep the show running. Keep the show running. It's for free. Like me. So again, please go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, and show my sponsors a little bit of love. Give them some loving. Give me some loving. So thanks again to you for supporting the show and supporting my amazing sponsors. I love doing this show. I want to keep doing it for you for free twice a week.
Thanks for listening to another great show from PodcastOne.com. We've got over 200 of the most listened to podcasts in the world. And with the NBA playoffs rapidly approaching, be sure to catch Short Corner with comedy writer Justin Halpern and ex-NBA journeyman Paul Shirley.
Steve Nash.
Yes. How you doing?
Catch the launch of Pussycat Dolls founder Robin Anton's new podcast, Kim Kardashian Checks In.
Kim?
Hi.
And if you're really feeling crazy, Podcast One has the Honey Badger coming soon.
Hey, stupid, what's going on?
It's all happening now at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Talk Is Jericho.
One of my favorite gigs of all time is Queen Live Aid. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It was voted by, 60 different writers and reviewers and prognostics of being the greatest gig of all time. And it's one of my favorites. It's kind of what Fozzy bases our motto on, in that we always want to do a Queen at Live Aid set. And that means they only had 20 minutes, but they went out there and just destroyed it. They played all their hits. Not a lot of talking. Great crowd interactions from Freddie. Great, just the whole vibe of their set was amazing. And it got me to thinking about the whole Live Aid show in its entirety. I have the DVD set. It was a 4-DVD set of the entire Live Aid performance. And I'd watched it years ago, but I decided to go back and revisit the whole Live Aid show. Now, what a spectacle this was. It's something that we'll never see again. And the reason why is because it had never really been done before. It was back on July 13th, 1985. So we're pretty much at the 29-year anniversary almost of this show. And for those of you that remember, for those of you who don't remember, it was two giant stadium shows. One of them was in Wembley Stadium in London, and the other was in JFK Stadium in Philadelphia. And it was a simulcast. So you would have, it started off first at the London show, and then about 3 or 4 hours in, it was back and forth between Philly and London. So you would,
kind of get, you know, it would be a nonstop kind of ongoing show, and it lasted all day long. And I remember donating to it, watching it back in 1985 on a hot summer day, and they had the numbers crawling across the stream, the screen, and you would phone in and vote or give money, I guess, is what was what they're asking for. Now, it was such a crazy concept because you talk about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There were so many Rock and Roll Hall of Famers on this show, it blows my mind. And it's the reason why I don't think you could ever do something like that again, because it just everybody was involved. So I watched all of the performances, and it's funny too, just to see like the 80s, man. I mean, the hair, you know, it's kind of like talking about the mullets, but the prevalent hairstyle that everyone really had was like really poofy, kind of a giant mohawk where the sides were shaved, but the poofiness was like at the front, and then it all had mullets on the back. And I'm talking about, you know, these crazy suits with the big padded shoulders, and they would all match. So you'd have like a lime green jacket and lime green baggy trousers with like a white fluffy shirt underneath. And everybody wore the same stuff. And obviously started out in London, and you had a bunch of really kind of English bands that were really most famous. Like Status Quo kicked it off, Style Council, Boomtown Rats, which was Bob Geldof's band. Bob Geldof organized the whole festival, put together this whole thing. You know, Spandau Ballet, Nick Kershaw, Sade, but it really kicked off when Sting came on. Because obviously Sting is Sting. So he came out there and was like the first guy to really kick it off at a big level. Also, he was wearing like just these like rolled up, I think they're called cargo pants, and a big baggy shirt. Like baggy in the 80s was the way to go. So they had a lot of interesting duets too, because Sting and Phil Collins then sang Every Breath You Take. And then Phil Collins sang his own song Against All Odds. Now, Phil Collins was kind of the star of the show for that day because he performed in Wembley, then got on the Concorde and flew to Philly. He performed with Eric Clapton, and then he performed with Led Zeppelin. Now, the problem with the Zeppelin gig is it's a very famous story, is that the Zeppelin performance is not on this DVD because Jimmy Page's guitar was out of tune. And this is the first time they'd reunited since like 1980, Zeppelin did. So Page's guitar was out of tune. Phil Collins played the wrong part. They butchered Stairway to Heaven. It was really bad. And because of that, Page and Plant refused to allow that performance to ever be seen anywhere officially again. Now, it's on YouTube, so you can go check it out, but you will never see that officially on any one of these DVDs or whatever. So then Paul Young came out. Remember Paul Young? He had a big song called Every Time You Go Away, Come Back and Stay. And he tore it up in Wembley, which led to the premier performance, which was U2. Now, this was 1985, so U2 is still getting started. Now, each band had 20 minutes on stage, and they had a traffic light on stage, green light. And when you got to 18 minutes or 19 minutes, it went to yellow. And if it got to red, you were done. Your power was cut, and you were finished. So every band only had that, didn't matter who you were, how big you were. So U2 had 20 minutes. They played Sunday Bloody Sunday. Then they went into Bad, okay? And they played it for like 14 minutes. It was amazing. Now, you got to watch it. If you have a chance to go on YouTube or to watch the DVD, watch U2. They were one of the stars of the show. That's when they broke out as being U2. Bono, he jumps off the big part of the stage, goes to like a lower part of the stage, and he's pointing at somebody in the front row. Now, there's 80,000 people in Wembley. People are crushing up against the barrier. Bono keeps pointing to this one girl. He jumps off the stage. It's about an 8-foot drop. And he goes to the front and helps the security pull this girl out of the front row and dances with her. We come to find out that she was being crushed at the front of the barricade. And Bono could see it and was trying to point to the security guards to help her, but they didn't understand what he was saying. So he jumped off the stage, like I said, an 8-foot drop, and went and helped her out of the front row. It brings chills to your spine. It's like goosebumps. That like Bono still had that presence of like God. You know, he was like the ultimate rock god, and here he goes jumping down to the floor to pull this poor girl out, and then gives her this big embrace. It was just amazing, man. It was so cool. And then we had the Beach Boys, who sounded great. Lots of harmonies, lots of cool stuff. Dire Straits and Sting singing Money for Nothing. Remember that one? I want my MTV. And then, of course, then Queen came out and did their just one of the best things you'll ever see. If you like live music, go watch Queen Live Aid now. And the thing was, Queen at that point in time weren't very popular. They were kind of on a downswing. Geldof convinced them to do the show and said, listen, all I want is hits. I don't want any pomp and circumstance. I don't want any crap. I just want the hits. And the rumor, the legend is that all of the guys were standing on the side of stage watching. You got Elton John and Sting and Paul McCartney and Mick Jagger. Like, everybody's there. Well, Mick was actually in Philly, but and they just watched as Freddie just controlled the crowd, and they were all just like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And that was like the brilliance of Freddie Mercury. Then you had David Bowie, and you had The Who came out there and just killed it. Elton John and George Michael. And it was funny because George Michael was still in Wham at the time, and they walk out on stage together to do Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, and George goes to the front of the stage, and Andrew Ridgely, poor Andrew Ridgely, who was the other member of Wham, he goes back to the background vocal booth and just, like, you know, shut up and just stand in the background where you belong. Then we have Madonna when she was just first starting out. McCartney did Let It Be. McCartney's mic dies, and for the first 2 minutes, you can't hear him. It's just Paul playing piano. That's how it was in 1985. Like, just good luck, buddy. And there was all these rumors that the Beatles were going to reunite that day. And I guess George Harrison was like, why would I go on stage and sing Let It Be with Paul? He didn't want me to sing Let It Be with him 20 years ago. Why would he want me to sing it with him now? Classic George, the coolest guy in the room, always. And then the Band-Aid. Remember a couple weeks ago I told you about Band-Aid? Do they know it's Christmas time at all? They had everybody come on stage, and Bob Geldof said, this probably might be a little bit of a cock-up, which means like a cluster, but everybody was great. And there was like 60 people on stage, and you see at one point in time, Freddie Mercury, Bono, and Sting all harmonizing on one microphone. I mean, how amazing is that? That was the end of the Wembley portion. Then you went over back to the States. Tom Petty kicked it off. Sabbath reunited. So you had a Zeppelin reunion and a Sabbath reunion on the same day. And Sabbath sounded great. Ozzy was off the charts. Then listen, this REO Speedwagon, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Judas Priest were killer. The Cars were killer. Neil Young, Eric Clapton, like we mentioned. Phil Collins doing another performance. Duran Duran. Like, in 1985, Duran Duran was like the shiznit, yo. Everybody on this show is huge. I mean, how many Hall of Famers have I read out already? Hall and Oates came on and did some numbers with the Temptations, which was killer. Then Mick Jagger came out, sang I Miss You and a couple of his solo tunes. And then Tina Turner came out and they sang State of Shock and It's Only Rock and Roll. And Mick did a wardrobe change in the middle of the song for no apparent reason. Like, they're just like, the band just keeps playing. Mick splits, comes back on like a minute later with a wardrobe change. And then Tina comes out and Mick rips Tina's skirt off. So she's just wearing like a leotard, like her ass is hanging out. And like, she's acting like it was a surprise. Obviously it wasn't, but remember how huge Tina Turner was back in those days. And then Dylan comes out with Keith Richards and Ron Wood. That shows how much the Stones were arguing at that point in time, because Mick, Keith, and Ronnie were all in the same city and didn't play together, but they played with other people. Very, very strange stuff, right? And then, of course, they had the big finale of USA for Africa, We Are the World, which wasn't as cool as the Band-Aid thing, because the Band-Aid was basically led by Bob Geldof and Sting and George Michael. Those guys were all on the track. There wasn't a lot of people that were on the track. Michael Jackson was conspicuous by his absence. He refused to take part. Prince refused to take part. Springsteen refused and feels bad about it now. Says if he would have realized how big it was, he would have done it. So there was a lot of people that didn't show up, you know, but it was interesting too. It was funny because they had like Chevy Chase and Jack Nicholson and Bette Midler introducing the bands, like very non rock and roll people. You know what I mean? But it was just kind of like, just shows just how huge the whole spectacle was. And meanwhile, the whole thing was to keep, it was like a telethon. You would buy, you know, you would pay money for the telethon. Apparently it made $283 million total is what they did. They were hoping to raise $1 million. The final figure was almost $300 million. So it was a huge success. Geldof received an honorary knighthood for his work, and it's an amazing spectacle. It's a perfect time capsule for who was huge in 1985. If you weren't on Live Aid in 1985, then you weren't really anything, with the exception of maybe Springsteen. So there you go. Go and check it out, and you will not regret it. U2 and Queen stealing the show.
We've got Adam Carolla coming up next, but first...
This is Talk is Jericho.
Joining the Pod of Thunder right now, we have the Pod Father himself. Adam Carolla is on the line. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate this, and it's funny because I don't know if you remember. I know you have so many guests on, but I did your podcast about a year and a half ago, and it was the first podcast I ever did, and I remember I was thinking, oh, podcast is probably like... You know, how big can this possibly be? I thought that podcasts were kind of like something that some kid did out of his basement. And then I walk in your huge, immaculate studio and see on the wall the Guinness Book of World Records plaque for the most listened to podcast ever. It was amazing.
Yeah, we had that photoshopped and I hang it in the front to build confidence in guys like you.
to let people know this is the real deal, right?
No, I just put my name over Ricky Gervais's. It's a thing, you know, it's an app.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it was, you were great, by the way, and...
Thanks.
It's fun. It's like everybody in the world who, you know, it's a weird thing, because it's like anybody can have their own radio station now.
Right.
Either at their warehouse or in their living room or in their mom's basement. You know, that's the good news. The bad news is... There's 2 million radio stations all running out of someone's basement.
Well, and that's the thing, like you said. I mean, that's kind of the way the media is nowadays, is anybody can be a star and everybody can be a star. But, I mean, your podcast, like I said, it was the first experience I ever had. And we just sat around and we just talked about whatever was going on. I remember there was some, like, bum that they'd found. He took to the hospital and he had, like, lice in his chest hair or something. And we talked about that for, like, 20 minutes. And afterwards, I remember thinking, like, wow, you can actually have a show where you just do talk about just random stuff. I just couldn't believe how fun it was to be involved and just talk about whatever you want. I mean, that's the beauty of podcasting. There's no real censorship on the content that you have.
You know, it's not only censorship, like, you know, FCC business.
Right.
But most radio stations have a program director,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to limit your lice-infested bum talk to 4 minutes and under. And then you got to go to commercial.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not only the restrictions put on you by the man, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
There's another man. He's a program director. He's nervous. He works for the station. He's staring at a clock. And if George Clooney was the guest and sat there for more than 6 minutes, he'd be giving you the wrap it up sign with his finger through the glass.
Right. Yeah, and you don't have to worry. And I know that you kind of got into the whole podcast thing because you had your own radio show, and then it kind of went awry. Tell us about how you got into the whole thing and becoming the biggest podcast in the history of the planet.
It started with me doing Loveline. And when I did Loveline, the radio show, it was a syndicated radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on in over 100 markets, maybe 150 markets. And when I switched from doing Loveline in 150 markets, I switched to doing mornings out here in Los Angeles to about, I don't know, 6 or 8 markets.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that time, maybe 2006, I was starting to realize there was a lot of people in Boston and Chicago who were used to hearing me who couldn't hear me,
mm-hmm.
but they were listening on their computer.
Okay.
Because they missed me, and there were kids. There were young guys because they listened to Loveline. So they're all kind of computer savvy, got their information from the computer, so on and so forth. So at some point when I was doing my morning show, they would come to me and say, you've had 19 million minutes of streaming this month online. And I'd say, wow, who's all listening, you know, to a morning show online, you know? And I realized it was all those people from all those cities that didn't have that had my previous show, but didn't have my current show.
Mm-hmm.
So when I ended up, when they switched formats in the radio station, they said, all right, you got 2 days left. I said to everyone, I'm going to go start a podcast. Everyone is listening on the internet. Come with me. And I already had a big followership on the internet. I had a big following on the internet already. Mm-hmm. So we just moved it over to the pod.
Now,
I was essentially podcasting while I was doing terrestrial radio.
Okay, so was podcasting, like, was it fairly new at that point in time when you started it?
It was new. There were a couple guys doing it. It wasn't, it still is nothing more than just speaking into a mic, capturing it on a file, and putting it up on iTunes, you know, just like sending it out. It's literally just an audio file. It's we give it a name, but it really is no different than capturing a voice, just recording a voice and distributing the voice, you know.
Well, yeah, obviously it's very easy to do. And like we mentioned, that's why now there's hundreds of podcasts. I mean, probably thousands of podcasts. But the beauty of
there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts.
There you go. And the beauty of it is, unlike terrestrial radio, if you do, you know, an episode and you have George Clooney on, if you're on the radio, it airs and then it pretty much disappears and it's gone forever. With the podcast, it's evergreen. It goes up online. People can discover it, listen to it anytime they want, all around the world. I mean, the meeting is just, it's such a great way to get your voice out there.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's the difference. It's sort of like music. Do you want to just turn on the radio and hope your song comes on? And if it does come on, hopefully you're not halfway into it. And then, or would you rather just have it on your phone and listen to it whenever, wherever, and as many times as you wanted to?
Right.
If you wanted to pause it, walk away for a day, you come back the next day and listen to it, you know, and then send it to a friend. I mean, I couldn't imagine telling anyone under 25, you're going to have to sit by this radio and wait for your favorite killer song to come on. They'd punch you in the nuts, right?
Right. I used to do that. Did you used to do that? Have a cassette in the player and then listen to the radio. And as soon as your favorite song come on, you have to run over and press play record to try and catch as much of it as you could.
It's so sad just holding that weird little recording box up to the speaker of the stereo, stuck, you know. But in a weird way, there was something, and then eventually that got to making mixed cassettes.
Mm-hmm.
But there was that artistry to doing the mixed cassette. You know, you get the 90-minute tape, you know, with 45 minutes on each side.
TDK.
You figure you had about 3.5 minutes left.
Yeah.
So you weren't sure whether to actually go for it and might cut off before the end.
That's right.
That last Aerosmith song.
Yeah.
It was always kind of a science to it. But it sort of made it fun.
Well, and also, too, you'd always get kind of the beginning of the intro would have the DJ's voice on it. This is REO Speedwagon with Keep On Loving You. And you'd be wanting them to shut up because a lot of the DJs would talk all through the intro until the singing started.
Right. Yeah, the whole thing is DJs would know how long the music bed was before the actual vocals kicked in. And even if it was a 2.5 minute music bed before the vocals kicked in, they would talk over that entire thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why they thought we wanted to hear them
about
the time and the traffic while we're hearing that guitar lick at the top.
I know, you'd want it. It's like, stop it. Van Halen's got this awesome riff going on. Shut up. That's why. And so I'm recording this.
Right. And I always liked the part where they'd work the theme of the song into it, so you'd hear Eddie Van Halen's guitar lick, and it's like, anyone ever had a hot teacher? Anyone grow up in Florida and know what it's like to have a beautiful 25-year-old blonde teaching them the A, B's, and the C's? Well, then you may want to, it's like, shut the fuck up, let me hear the song already.
And that's the worst, that's the best example, because that's the beginning of Hot for Teacher. It's the best part. It's got that really wicked drum intro, and it's got the crazy guitar part going on. You'd have some jack-off talking over the top of it. Now,
well, the good news is all those jack-offs are dead.
That's right.
And they'll never be replaced.
Yes.
There's no more. Somebody figured out we don't need those jack-offs anymore.
Now, you sound like you're pretty much into music. Who are some of the bands that you really dig?
Oh, you know, I find myself listening when I drive in my car, when I'm not on my phone or doing an interview or doing whatever. I find myself forcing myself to just listen to classical music. And the reason I do that is because my schedule is so hectic There's so much noise in it. I have so many conversations that I realized that just hearing non-verbiage, like just literally not having process a sentence or a word or a thought, hearing classical, it's just like getting a foot massage while I'm driving. So when I drive, I just put on the classical station and simply listen to that. When it comes to music overall, I can't stand all the electronic, techno, whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't stand the robot music. It drives me insane. All the club music, all that pulsating bullshit,
right,
drives me nuts. After that, I'm a sucker for the late 70s, early 80s, what would have been called New Wave, which would have been Elvis Costello, Joe Jackson, Graham Parker. The artists I like the most are guys like John Hyatt, who are sort of singer-songwriter types. I guess I'm a sucker for the singer-songwriter types. But good jazz and good classical, and I'll take any day of the week.
You know, it's interesting, too. I was talking to Dave Mustaine a couple weeks ago, and he's doing a classical show with the San Diego Symphony Orchestra and, you know, integrating some of the Megadeth tunes. But it's funny, like, is there any...
Oh, you goddamn wrestlers with your classical music. It never ends.
Always classical. But there's nobody...
Always classical.
There's nobody making classical music now. It's funny, like, there's no Bach, or there's no, like, Vivaldi. There's no, like, you know, Schwartz or Smith or Jackson or anybody making, like, new classical music. It's almost like a dead medium. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I do. The good news is the old stuff was so good, and there's so many different versions of it now that it's sort of like, you know, I feel the same way about classical music as I feel about porn, which is I love them both, and if they never made a new one of either of them, I'd have enough to keep me busy until the end of my lifetime.
Yeah. Well, you're right. It was classic stuff. You mentioned late 70s. I was talking the other day. The most underrated band of the 70s, by far, for me, is ELO. By far.
Oh, yeah.
You agree?
Absolutely. Well, one of the problems with ELO is people don't know what ELO was. I mean, they don't really know it was just basically Jeff Lynne. You know?
Yeah.
And I had Jeff Lynne on my podcast. He's a very sweet gentleman, but he's also, you realize, he's a musical genius.
Of course.
And you know, as good a songwriter and musician as he is, he's also a great producer.
Uh-huh.
And he's produced... Look, there's certain albums, I'll just tell my kids, look, you know, obviously when it comes to the Beatles, you got to get Sgt. Pepper's and you got to get Abbey Road and stuff, but there's a few good ones out there. You get the best of ELO and you're covered. I mean, that is just wall to wall great songs, so rich, so symphonic, and I'll give you a deep cut from the 70s in a rock band, and people are going to have to go to iTunes and look up some of their stuff, but UFO.
Oh,
was
totally.
A great rock band out of the 70s that doesn't really get their due these days.
Completely. And I think that's because, I mean, they were always kind of fighting and arguing, and there was so much turmoil between them. But when you listen to Strangers in the Night with Michael Shankar on guitar, that is a monumental, very influential record for sure.
Yeah, well, you know your UFO, Chris. And most guys don't. It's funny because they remember... You know, Foghat, and they remember BTO, but they don't remember UFO. And I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's quintessential 70s rock right there.
Is it because maybe UFO never had that one big monster hit? You know, like Foghat had Slow Ride, everyone knows that, but UFO never had the big like one that everybody knows.
Yeah, they had, I guess, Lights Out in London or something.
Yeah, like Lights Out.
Your live song. The great part about And you miss this because there used to be some great live songs. Like, I mean, obviously you have your Peter Frampton's, mm-hmm. but you had your Pat Travers, Boom Boom, Out Goes the Lights.
Yes.
But in UFO, when the guy's singing Lights Out in London, he does Lights Out in London the first three times, and then the fourth time he goes Lights Out Chicago, and everyone goes insane, which leads me to believe he recorded that in Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's from the live record where they quote-unquote recorded it in Chicago. Now, we were talking about Jeff Lynne and ELO being so underrated, and also as a producer, Jeff produced the last couple Beatles tunes, Free as a Bird and Real Love. Are you a Beatles guy, too?
I'm a Beatles guy. I love the Traveling Wilburys.
Yes.
I mean, almost anything that Jeff Lynne touches is just awesome. Roy Orbison, I think he did. I mean, the guy,
yes,
just he suffers from being too good at too many things.
Uh-huh.
And maybe having too big a beard and always wearing dark glasses hasn't helped him either. But it's like, I don't think people know who he is. He is probably responsible for more hits in an indirect way than John Lennon.
Well, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's another thing, too. He didn't really look like a rock star, but he definitely, I mean, he was one of the guys that I think really understood the genius of George Harrison. Because if you're looking at the Beatles, it's funny for poor George. He was an amazing songwriter, a great singer, a great guitar player. His only problem was he was in a band with the two best songwriters and singers of all time in Lennon and McCartney. So he was always going to be slotted number three in the Beatles, but the guy was a genius as well.
When it comes to solo work, I will take George Harrison over John Lennon any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Wow.
I've always said that. People think it's blasphemous. It's not a slight against John Lennon. I don't think John Lennon's solo stuff was terrific, and I think George Harrison's solo stuff was amazing, and I'd much rather listen to George Harrison's solo.
Well, there wasn't a lot of John output, and I mean, my favorite thing is when you listen to All Things Must Pass, George was so stifled as a songwriter, he puts out a triple record as soon as the Beatles break
right.
up. A triple record.
And it, right.
You
right.
know, it just shows, I mean, do you like it better than Wings, too, then? You like George's work better
yep.
than Paul and Wings? Gotcha.
I do. I don't love everything that he did, but the stuff that I do love, I just love. I just really like. Wings were fine, Lennon was fine, but George Harrison, if you want to just get All Things Must Pass, they're just the best of George Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty solid stuff. And then even when he came back and did his second stuff in the 80s, that was fun too.
Oh, yeah, Got My Mind Set on You. That was a huge
right.
hit for him. And then, like you mentioned, even the Traveling Wilburys were massive, too. That was a great... And George always seemed like... did you ever see the Scorsese movie of Living on in the Material World that he did?
No, I never saw that.
Oh, you got to check it out, man. You need to watch it tonight if you have time. It will make you... like, it made George seem like the type of a guy... like, if you went to a party and the Beatles were having a party and you would walk in and go like, hey, where's George at? And George would be in the corner with all the cool people around him telling stories or something. It just really makes you realize just how amazing of a person he was.
Yeah, I did. Oh, wait a minute. I did see the George. I did see that documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It aired on, I don't know, HBO about a year ago.
Yes.
Or whatever it was. But yeah, I did see that. Yeah,
yeah.
That was awesome.
Really, really.
But wasn't it like a three-parter or something?
Yeah, it was. Well, I saw the DVD was two parts. I think the thing was about three and a half to 4 hours long. And of course, done by Scorsese, you can't go wrong. It was very intricate, very detailed, and only a portion of it was based around the Beatles, which is the way it should be. The rest of I found the second half of all of his 70s and 80s work was really amazing.
I concur, and yeah, everything Scorsese does is great too.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
We're talking about to Adam Carolla about all things music. We got off on a musical tangent, which is always fun. Love talking music with like-minded folks. But talk about how huge your podcast is. The Guinness Book of World Records, most listened to podcast of all time. Very successful. But now there's some issues going on with your podcast where there's some hassle and some legal problems. And I know you want to talk about that, as do I. So kind of explain what's been going on and why you had to establish the Corolla Podcasting Legal Defense Fund.
Well, we're being sued by patent trolls. And patent trolls are lawyers mainly who buy up patents that already exist and then take them out and sort of dust them off and sue people with them. And it's pretty broad stuff. Like you say to yourself, what do you mean? Who's suing you? Like what? Mm-hmm. What did you do? And the answer is, I really don't know. They don't need to give you an answer. They just sue you. They go to a place in eastern Texas, and they set up shop, and they start suing people. And what we're doing, instead of paying them off, because we didn't do anything wrong, and then secondly, if we paid them off, then they just come after everybody.
Right.
In our estimation, we're going to fight them in court. And once we fight them and beat them, then they'll go away. Now, if we roll over and just pay them like the mob, then they're going to go after Chris Jericho, mm-hmm. and they're going to go after Marc Maron, and they're going to have to go after everybody. Why wouldn't you? That's what they do, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you go to Adam Carolla and Adam Carolla just goes, here's $1 million, go away, then you go, all right, let me go to iTunes, let me find the top 200 podcasts, and let's go right on down the line and start sending them cease and desist letters. Instead, we're fighting them. Unfortunately, the patent litigation is some of the most expensive litigation in the world. I don't know why, but it is. And we are rallying all the podcasts to rally their fans and give to this legal defense fund. And we're going to use all the money we raise and then probably some out of my pocket, probably a lot out of my pocket, to fight off these patent trolls. But that's the way we're going to do it. And what we're basically is we set up a crowdfunding thing at fundanything.com/patent troll. And we're just saying to everybody, if you like listening to your podcast, you want to keep it free. And again, maybe you're not a fan of mine. Maybe you like NPR. Maybe you like The Nerdist. Maybe you like whatever. Believe you me, they'll be next.
Mm-hmm.
So contribute. We will fight it. We will win it, and then the patent trolls will go away.
It's almost like, with like the cigarette industry or whatever. Like, if one guy goes down, everybody's going down. And obviously, they hit you up first because you're the biggest podcaster, you know, in the world, as we said. What is the patent that they're suing you for? What patent are you what law are you breaking or whatever for them to be able to come after you?
Their patent is for a playlist. Meaning, we do Monday's podcast comes out on Monday, and
yeah.
Tuesday's podcast comes out on Tuesday. And when you go to our website or iTunes and you see them in a sequential order, they claim that is their technology. Now, you could only imagine if they beat us, the entire internet's going away. Right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, every song playlist, iTunes is going to have to close down, you know? So that's my point. It is not even my podcast. It's any podcast that you know, like I said, that has an order of when their podcasts are released. That's the tech, but that's how thin it is. It's paper thin, but there's nothing you can do. You can't just walk into the courthouse and go, oh, please give me a break.
Right.
You have to fight it.
Now, you mentioned, so you're saying, like, you know, for example, I have, I think, you know, 32 episodes of my podcast. I just started in December. But the software that makes it go, here's episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, that's the patent they claim they own?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. That's,
oh, yeah.
Talk about thin, like you said. Now, you mentioned about East Texas. Why are they filing in East Texas? Is that like a patent troll haven or something?
Yes, it is. It's a safe. They have friendly judges. They have friendly courts. It's big business for them to have all this litigation come their way, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lawyers have to literally pick up and go to Texas for months, hotels, restaurants, you know. It's business. They like it. They think that they, in most cases, when they're suing, you know, Apple or, you know, they're suing Google or whoever, they think, you know, the country folk don't like the big fellas and they're going to make them pay. You know, in this case, I'm not a big fella, but maybe they're coming after me because I'm a celebrity. And they think, you know, screw those Hollywood homos. We're
right.
going to, you know, we're going to side with these guys. Either way, they have found a place which is friendly to their kind of litigation, and that's why they basically just hung their shingle there. I don't think these guys live in Tyler,
yeah.
Texas, or wherever the hell they are. They just go down there, use a courthouse, make their money, and go home.
So are you trying to see if you can get it changed to a different state? How do you fight this?
Well, yeah, first thing I did was spend $50,000 on a change of venue. Just literally $50,000 arguing that our business isn't in Texas. Mm-hmm. Why are we going to Texas to fight this patent?
Right.
You know, that was the first $50,000.
Wow.
It's insanity.
So did they grant it to you, or are you still, that's still up in the air right now?
That's still up in the air right now. Everything's up in the air. But we have a court date, and the court date is September, and that's when we go to fight the trolls.
And I mean, I know this is, it's so ridiculous. I mean, there's so many questions that I'm asking that are so basic, but I'm sure it's the same things that you're asking. So how do you beat them? Like, how do you prove that you didn't? I mean, I don't even know. Like, how do you beat these guys?
Well, you hire experts.
Yeah.
That are expensive, and your experts essentially explain that you know, you hire a bunch of expensive guys, and they basically explain to them that, you know, they're not using this, or this is outdated, or this is neither here nor there, whatever it is, and you end up winning. I mean, there's no doubt we're going to win, because if we don't win, I can't imagine what the future for podcasting is. Everybody who's looked at the case, everybody who's had 10 minutes of law school under their belt, who's taken a look at this case, has said, oh, please, there's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to win for sure. But in order to get to that point, it's going to cost you $1.3 million.
Right.
And that's where the problem lies.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's interesting, just like you said, I mean, this happened to me a few years ago in the WWE. I got thrown over the top rope, and I landed on a cable runner, you know, a guy that just...
Oh, boy.
And I landed on him, and he was not paying attention. He was in the wrong spot, and he just... I got mad at him, so I kind of... I dragged him, like, 12 inches across the floor. And then, you know, a couple months later, I get a call that I'm getting sued for $7 million by this guy because he can't work anymore and he's suffered, you know, interminable
right.
injuries. And meanwhile, he just hired an ambulance chaser. But Vince McMahon's policy is, I will fight this guy in court until he goes away. Because if I give this guy $20,000 or I give him $15,000, then suddenly the door opens. And like you said, there's 100 people a day that are going to try and get some kind of a settlement. So you could go and try and pay this guy off. But if you do so, then every podcaster, iTunes, everybody that puts out a record is going to have to do the same.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, and it's why you don't negotiate with terrorists when they take hostages, because they end up taking more hostages.
Mm-hmm.
If every single time a terrorist group kidnapped a CNN film crew, you try to get them back, but you don't give them $1 million in a Scud missile, because that would put every film crew in more danger.
Yeah.
But that then makes it a business.
Right.
And that's the problem.
How have your fans and your listeners been responding? Is everybody kind of rallying behind you on this?
Yeah, I've been doing everyone's podcast, making the rounds, spreading the word. I haven't checked today, but I think we're knocking on the door of about $300,000, which is pretty
wow.
sweet, pretty nice. Yeah,
that's great.
Nice response. From people.
That's $300,000 in donations so far.
Yeah, and it's like the good news is you got $300,000 worth of fan support. The bad news is all you need is another million to get back to even.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. And you go to court in October, so there's still time. And then for people, if they want to donate, they go to fundanything.com/patent troll. PATANT troll. Is that correct?
Yeah. If you go to fundanything.com, you'll see it up there on the front of the site, or you go to adamcarolla.com, you'll see it up on our site, and you just click it, and you just kind of, you know, give what you can.
Well, and that's the thing, and to all my listeners too, remember, these podcasts are free, and that's something that we do, you know, we enjoy doing these podcasts, and obviously we want to keep the costs from coming out of your pockets, but this is something that if you believe in, if you enjoy Talk is Jericho, you enjoy Adam Carolla's show, you need to donate to help stop the patent trolls, and they're actually called that, patent trolls?
I don't think they call themselves patent trolls, but... You know, I think garbage men probably call themselves sanitation engineers, too.
That's right. That's right. Hey, a couple last questions for you. I know that we're fellow Dancing with the Stars alumni. How did you enjoy doing that?
I didn't enjoy it, but what I did, it kind of transcended enjoyment, which is I found it so scary and such a challenge, and I felt I was so far out of my comfort zone that I felt it was a growth experience. And I don't know if you felt that way as well. I wasn't having fun, but I was having a nice growth experience.
Well, I mean, I think that's the reason why we did it. I mean, you know, I got asked a couple times, and the first time I was like, forget this. Why would I ever do that? And then you realize, you know, as a professional, it's a challenge to get out there and do something that you'd never done before, like ever.
Right. And, you know, what if somebody said, name me something you're good at. Well, for me, it'd be, you know, doing improv, doing stand-up, boxing. Those are things I'm good at. All right, give me something you're bad at. Reading and dancing would be my top two lists. And somebody said, all right, what if you were going to dance in front of 20 million people? What would that be like? Well, I'm pulling into the NFL Network right now, so bear with me.
That's all right.
So I said, so the notion, like, if anyone's listening, tell me what scares you. What scares you? Reading out loud?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, imagine reading out loud in front of 20 million people. Or what scares you? Snakes? Imagine handling a snake in front of 20 million people.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, it's like, what could be scarier than doing something you're horrible at in front of 20 million people? And that's basically why I decided to do it. Maybe I'm a sadist, but I just thought, you know, let's do something that scares me in front of a large group of people. That'll make it that much scarier. And maybe I'll have a little growth experience out of it.
Well, and you're totally right. Like you said, I mean, to go out in front of somebody, my first dance, I'd never danced before in front of 25 million people, for sure. There's one thing I was going to tell you. You just got an offer to do Reading with the Stars.
Oh, no, God, no. Please, dear God, no.
Hey.
No.
When you're talking...
I'm not going to have Mario Lopez kick the crap out of me in one more event.
Paul Reiser is an amazing reader. I'm just going to let you know that right now.
I'm screwed. Hold on, Chris. Let me pick up the phone. I'm just
all right.
The speaker.
Look at this. This is real life stuff here. We got Adam Carolla pulling into the NFL Network parking lot on the air.
That's me. You got me?
He's receiving his pass.
Can you hear me?
Are you talking to us? We can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm just going to drop. Can I drop my car here? Okay, thanks.
Did you get your parking pass? Are you on the lot?
I got my parking pass. I'm on the lot. I'm pulling up. I'm giving the valet my keys. I'm showing him this.
See, this
I'm
is
my window up. I'm taking my wallet. I'm hitting the road. Thank you.
Did you tip him?
Not yet. I haven't picked my car up.
Okay, sorry, you're going to pick it up afterwards. See, this is real life stuff. Adam is staying on the line with us because he's actually picking up his parking pass to go on his crusade at the NFL NFL Network, which
is... Well, that's the thing for me is, you know, it's unfortunately, I have a really busy schedule and I have to spend quite a bit of time going out and, you know, going on Rich Eisen show, and not that Rich isn't a treat, but I'm trying to raise money to try to defend this legal case. So,
well,
it's a job.
Well, that's the thing. You have to go out there. We all love your show. It's the Adam Carolla Show, obviously the most popular podcast. Who's been your favorite guest? Last question on your show.
Well, just a name dropper for out of the blue every once in a while. Just because we tweet out, you know, we'll take some calls. Alec Baldwin calls in, and he's always great. He called in, I think it was last week, just with the, like, you know, it's weird. Just, hey, what's happening?
Yeah, just to see what's up, right?
I needed to talk. So it's kind of fun. Well, all right, now they're gonna put me in hair and makeup, I think.
Wow, Adam Carolla's getting hair and makeup live here on Talk Is Jericho. This is incredible.
I just walked into the NFL. I'm looking at Rich Eisen's studio, but I don't see Rich Eisen.
Is it a nice studio?
Oh, nice. Top of the line. Hold on.
You're not Rich Eisen. You got the same hair. Where is Rich?
Adam Carolla is trying to find Rich Eisen in the NFL building. This is here. This is top news.
You used to do them here. Oh, all right. I went to the wrong. Yeah.
Adam Carolla has just gone to the wrong building.
Sorry. No, I just ran into someone I went to high school with. This is Chris Jericho's podcast. Hold on. What are you doing here, Judy?
Adam's meeting Judy. Oh. Judy is there. Old friend of Adam's, Judy.
I went to high school with. I went to someone I was in the fifth grade with. All right, I'm sorry. I'm going to find Rich. Good to see you. I just ran into someone I went to fifth grade with.
Did you find
walking through the building? Well, I went to Rich Eisen's old. This is a compound,
right?
So now the guy went to go try to find where Rich Eisen's. You know what drives me nuts?
What
you must experience this?
What's that?
They ask you to come do something,
mm-hmm.
but there's no dude who's standing outside when you're supposed to pull in at 11.
Oh yeah, to tell you, yeah, to lead you where you're supposed to go.
Right. So then you wander around the place, circumnavigate it three times, like Magellan. Then eventually you pull up and you tap a guy on the shoulder, and he goes, "Oh, there you are."
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, "Yeah, buddy."
Yeah. And meanwhile, it's a maze to try and find out where you have to go in those buildings. So it would be nice if someone would come down and lead. Not that you need your handheld, but just to show you which way you're supposed to go.
Just saying, if Chris Jericho's showing up to do the 11 o'clock podcast, how about 10:55,
yeah.
Send a guy down to the guard shack and he stands there.
Yeah, exactly. Send the runner down to come and meet you. So you're basically lost. You still don't know where you are.
I'm still wandering around. Oh, now I got the wave.
Oh, you got a wave? Okay.
I'll ask the guy the question on it. You're not over there anymore? Security was supposed to keep an eye out for me. Well, you always do.
Oh, that's the guy.
Security always drops the ball.
That's exactly.
Right, Crystal, now I probably have to go.
All right. That's great, though. We just talked about that, and then the guy that was supposed to find you actually found you and said, "Hey, there you are." All right. Thanks, Adam. We appreciate it. And everybody listening right now, fundanything.com/patent troll. Let's stop these bastards before they start messing stuff up. Adam is on a crusade, and I'm asking all of you to join him. I know I will as well.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
And we'll get more Talk Is Jericho after this.
Talk Is Jericho.
All right. Let's go to the phones here. We got Alex calling from Connecticut. What's going on, Alex?
Not much. Just enjoying this rain.
Okay. Well, I'm in sunny LA, so it sucks to be you.
Yep.
Just kidding, man. What's going on? What's your question?
My question is a band that you love and many people endorse, including a ton of celebrities. How did you discover Steel Panther?
Well, they came on my radar years ago when they were doing Metal School and Metal Shop. They used to play at the Viper Room. So this was back at the Key Club back in LA, probably back in 2002, 2003. And when I really started getting into them was basically when we got offered to go on tour with them in Australia just a few months ago. That's when I really kind of got into the tunes, and I watched them every night on stage, and they killed it. And I became a huge fan. They're one of those bands that if you haven't seen them live, you need to, because it will change the way you think about them if you don't like them. I think they're one of the most entertaining bands, one of the funnest bands you can go see, and their tunes are really good. The harmonies are great. The riffs are great. The hooks are great. So definitely, I love them too because I've known them for years, and the fact that they made it against every rule that dictates what you're supposed to do to make it, you know? And I just think that's it's a really cool success story. Great band.
And what would you say is your favorite track off the new album?
Probably Glory Hole or Gang Bang at the old folks' home. How about you?
Very nice. If I Were King.
Okay. Well, and just so you know, a little bit of a secret that I'm revealing, Steel Panther will be a guest on Talk is Jericho very, very soon. So there you go. You heard it here first.
Very nice. A bombshell.
All right, man. A big bombshell. Exactly. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Let's head over to Donnie in Phoenix, the desert.
Hi,
what's going on in the desert, Donnie?
Not much, really hot, but I was wondering, if you ever came back in a non-wrestling capacity to WWE, say as a manager, what current WWE superstar would you most want to manage?
I don't know. Actually, I probably could be a manager. People ask me sometimes if I would be behind the scenes as a writer or as a producer, and I always say no because my ego's too big. I like being in front of the camera. But I could see myself being a commentator or maybe a manager, if such a thing even exists anymore. Don't really know, because right now most of the guys that are there, if they need the mouthpiece, they pretty much have one. Paul Heyman's doing a great job with Brock Lesnar and with Cesaro. So I think I also love the fact that what he did with CM Punk, you know, as far as a guy that didn't really need a mouthpiece, but just two great talkers put together like Nick Bockwinkle and Bobby Heenan did. So I guess it would depend, you know. It's not something I'm going to be doing anytime soon. So when the time comes, I would look around and scout out who's got a lot of talent but needs a little bit of help on their promos, or somebody that's a great talker that you could really have some good back and forth with. So can't really pick a name right now because everybody's kind of taken care of. You know what I mean? Who do you think? Who do you think needs a good manager?
I was thinking some of the NXT guys, like maybe Sami Zayn could use a good mouthpiece when he comes up.
See, I don't watch NXT really, so I haven't really seen him. So I'm sure there's a lot of guys down there that can use some help. You know, it's learning how to talk is it takes time, and some people pick it up right away, and other people, you know, never get it. So it just depends. But I think having a manager, bringing back some managers is a great idea and something that the WWE should think about if you can find the right guy, because there's always going to be that dude that doesn't really talk well but has amazing potential, and that's when you need the help. So thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it, Donnie.
Definitely, man. Have a nice night.
Let's go over to West Longbridge, New Jersey with Michael. How you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
I'm a huge fan. I've been a fan of you ever since you were in WCW.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. What's your
My
question?
Favorite gimmick was when you were stealing all the masks, and every time you talked to JoJo Dillon, to steal, get your belt back. That was my favorite time.
Oh, yeah, when I was doing the souvenir thing. I stole Juventud's mask, Disco Inferno's headband, Prince Iakea's lay. That was just called keeping myself amused, basically, more than anything. What's your question today, man?
My question is, NHL playoff series are you most looking forward to the thing, and who do you think is going to win the cup?
Well, I'm a diehard Winnipeg Jets fan, and it's a drag that they didn't make the playoffs again. But, I mean, you know, no other Canadian teams are in. But I live in Tampa. I've got a good relationship with the Tampa Bay Lightning, so I'm going to cheer for them for now. As far as who do I think is going to win, I don't know, man. Who do you think? Anaheim, Chicago? Who do you think's got the upper hand right now?
I think Anaheim, maybe St. Louis, but St. Louis has a lot of injuries right now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who's your team, the Devils?
Yeah, the Devils.
Okay. So tell me some of the first-round matchups, because I'm not familiar with all of them.
Well, you got the Rangers and Flyers.
Okay, let's do this right now. Here's what we're going to do. I got Michael here from New Jersey. We're going to make our predictions on every series and see what happens, okay? So the first – who's the first one that you just said?
Rangers and Flyers.
Rangers, Flyers. Okay, I'm going to take the Rangers. How about you?
I don't want to do it, but I have to take the Rangers.
All right, so next is Detroit at Boston. Who are you going to take there?
Boston. You know, I think that can go 7 games.
Okay, I'll take the Red Wings because Darren McCarty was on my show, so I'll go for the
That's
Wings.
That's your buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Montreal and Tampa Bay. I'm going with Tampa.
Montreal.
Ooh, you saucy Joe here. Okay, after that is Columbus and Pittsburgh. I mean, Columbus, who cares? Worst name ever, Blue Jackets.
Horrible jersey, horrible logo.
I know, I don't like it. Okay, let's go over to the other conference now. And it's Minnesota and Colorado. I'm going to go with Colorado.
I agree with you, Colorado.
Okay, and is Chicago and St. Louis are next? I'll go Blackhawks. You?
I want to say St. Louis if they were healthy, but they're not healthy, so I'm going to say Blackhawks.
Okay, and then we go over to Dallas and Anaheim. It's going to be a good battle, but I'm going with the Ducks.
Me too. Anaheim as well.
Okay, and it's L.A. Kings and the Sharks, Battle of California. Wow, I don't know. What do you think about that one?
That's a 50-50 shot.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Kings.
I was going to say the Kings as well.
All right, so we got Rangers, Red Wings, Tampa, Pittsburgh, Colorado, Blackhawks, Ducks, and Kings on my end. And we will see what happens in a couple weeks when the first round is over. We'll go for our next round picks.
Time of the year.
That's right, man. You know the hockey's going to be good. No matter who wins, the hockey is always amazing at this time
always,
of year.
Always the best.
Well, thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it. We'll see if we can win some cash.
Thanks for my call, sir.
And you should be going to DraftKings.com to make your predictions here and win some money.
I will now.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for linking to Amazon through the Talk is Jericho page at podcastone.com whenever you do your online shopping. It's easy to find and easy to do. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, and that'll take you to all the sponsors of Talk is Jericho, including the Amazon links. We even have Amazon links for Canada and the UK, so please make sure to link to Amazon whenever you do your shopping. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a few dollars to Talk is Jericho so I can keep bringing you the pot of the now twice a week for free. No hidden fees, no extra charges. You still get the great Amazon prices and services, but you just help out Talk is Jericho in the process. So please go to podcastone.com and click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. And thank you, that's you, for hitting that download button. In fact, if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend to check out the show and tell them to tell a couple of friends and so on and so on and so on and so on. Somebody's going to get the ass kicked. You could even hit that subscribe button at iTunes so you never miss an episode. So do it now. Do it. I'm telling you. We'll see you next week with more Talk is Jericho. Stay hard, stay hungry, stay heavy. Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
This has been a Podcast One production. Executive producer Norm Pattis.